Hey guys, happy holidays, and two quick announcements before we start. First off, we are going to be having another call-in show next week, except it will not be with Dave. It will be with Alicia and Chris, because Dave's on vacation. So that will be held on January 6th, about 5 p.m. If you're interested, send an email to feedback@theamphour.com with your name, your location, what you want to talk about, and your Skype name, because we're going to actually just Skype people in. The second thing is just that we had some blips with the audio, so it'll start sounding different about halfway through the show. Last thing is, I guess this is the third thing, but whatever. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Dave's obviously not here this week, but we really appreciate it. We appreciate all our Patreon sponsors. We appreciate Paul Stevenson for donating the theme, and we love you guys. Here we go. Let's listen. This is the Amp Hour Podcast. Recorded December 30th, 2015. Episode 280. New Year Education. Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
And I'm Akiba from Freak Labs and Hacker Farm.
Welcome back, Akiba, and almost Happy New Year.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's been 2015 has been a crazy year. So I'm looking forward to 2016, but mm-hmm. There's been ups and downs for 2015, so it's kind of nice to see it go, but it's been a lot of good memories too.
All right, well, let's get the highlight reel. What's been the ups for you?
I got a girlfriend, which is like amazing for me. Yeah. It's like especially for someone like me who just like lives on a farm. No,
I was
going
to say,
like,
living out in the country is usually like, you know, less population density makes things tough. Yeah.
And then, but you know, I really enjoyed I was doing consulting for a DNA sequencing company, but then like I actually quit that so I could just focus on my own stuff. So I think that was a positive step too.
Nice.
I feel like I'm a bit done with consulting, and like that's like kind of the mid step to just doing your own thing.
Like
and
being so a, it was like being kinda, a product development company basically, right? I mean,
Yeah. It's like a crutch, and then so like you know, and I felt like I was kind of relying on it too much.
Yeah, that's a common story. A lot of people, I think, I know, I just talked to Colin from Punch Through, the Light Blue Bean makers, and he was talking about that. And I think Mark and Joe did that for Salier when they were getting started as well, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a very common story, especially for product stuff. But yeah, it's like that drip feed of like, hey, we got some more capital to keep you afloat.
Yeah. It's like, but the problem is like I feel like, for me, then it just makes me lazy, and so like I need.
I'll just up my rate, whatever.
I need to burn the boats behind me and just like charge forward.
Ooh,
like,
burn the like, boats. Yeah. Well,
it's like the Viking mentality.
Is that what they did? That was the Vikings that did that?
I think so. Like there was that one story where like the famous Viking warrior like burned the boats and just like charged forward. I could be wrong.
I mean that sounds familiar.
No, I mean like I might have my stories mixed up, but that's like kind of at least in my mind that's how it works.
Yeah, cool. And yeah, so I've been seeing. I mean, you post a lot of stuff. I mean, you're posting about what you've been working on, and I think you had a showcase of all the boards you've been working on. And there was a lot, man. Like you've been working on a lot of different boards.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of boards. I have maybe I think around 20 different boards like kind of in my queue of like they either need to be assembled and tested and like, you know. And then like my problem is I never release anything to my shop because I'm always like, oh, I don't know. Is it good enough? Maybe, you know, maybe I just need to tweak it a little bit more. And that's like the worst thing you can do as a designer.
Oh, just keep iterating on it and never letting it fly.
Yeah. I think it's like kind of perfectionist syndrome. And then it's like, that's, so I realized that and I'm like trying to correct myself on that. Because when like releasing stuff always brings anxiety. Like, will people like it? You know, Like, it's like kind of.
It also brings this other thing, though, you know. Cash.
Income. Yeah. Very, very important.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Very important. 2016, the year of cash.
Yeah. Especially now that I have a girlfriend, it's like, I can't be like, oh, well, we're just going to eat bread tonight.
Ramen profitability. just all ramen all the time. Delicious.
Yeah. But it's pretty nice. I like, there's a lot of kind of interesting designs that I'm working on. And some of them are a bit experimental. And then some of them are kind of like, and some of them are just like kind of my bread and butter, like sensor network stuff.
Yeah, but, right. I think I'm trying to remember. So obviously you've been on the show before and people should go check that out as well. So you've always talked a lot about the sensor network stuff. I've seen that you were talking about in the meantime, you pushed out the rice paddy monitoring as well, right?
Yeah, the rice farm monitoring. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be starting to work with Tokyo University on that, which is like kind of an interesting thing. So they're like kind of it's quite a prestigious university, and then they contacted one of us and said, let's talk. So I was like, oh, interesting.
So what's a quick block diagram on that thing? Is it like long-range radio processing other stuff, or what's on there?
Yeah. It's like, it's basically like single hop nodes. We have amplified radio front ends. So basically it's long-range radios. So each radio could probably do like a couple kilometers.
Wow.
Or each node.
Yeah.
And then we have like one aggregator node, which just like takes all the data from the different nodes in the rice paddy and then sends it to a back-end server.
Cool.
And then
so that one has like a 3M card or 3G card or something on it, or what?
Yeah. So it's using a 3G modem.
Yeah. Cool. And what's the software stack on the back end?
We're using Python Flask and then either running it off of our dev server, or I think they moved it to like AWS or something.
Okay.
Totally forgot. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. No, that's great though, and that's great because then, and I remember reading about that. It was like, an enabling technology for basically getting higher output, right? I mean, that's kind of one of the ideas there, right? Or was it for it for aging population as well? Was that another goal?
Yeah. It was for like a lot of the rice farmers out here are just like kind of getting older. Like, for me, like I'm 40. Oh, I just hit 42. Jesus.
Sneaks up on you, huh?
It's like, it's like, oh man, I still feel like I haven't matured either. So I was like,
oh, that's okay.
But yeah. So like, but I mean, like that's like super young. Most of the rice farmers here are like at 60 years old, they're considered like young spring chickens. So like around, they go like 70, 75.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty hard work too. I mean, it's not easy work. That's nutty.
It's backbreaking. But we'll be continuing that one, and then there's some other projects. Like we're monitoring boar traps, and then
Niels Bohr?
Bohr. Yeah, we're trying to find the hydrogen atom. No, boar, like wild pigs, are like an invasive species in Japan. And so they're like actually in a lot of different parts of the world. And the thing is that like because like normally they just feed off of food in the forest, but then since there's like kind of construction encroaching on their area, then they like they're losing all their food sources, and so they're just ravaging the farmers' crops.
Oh, right.
And then
So they're just trapping them, and you want to know when each one's trapped, so then
nice tasty
dinner, or you can reset the trap to catch other boar.
So they like they cause a lot of problems for the farmers because one boar can just totally devastate a whole year's crop. So then,
that's crazy.
The government actually pays like the local trappers to trap the boar, but like all the trappers are old too, and so like they can't. Like the traps are like all in the mountains, and they can't like check them all the time. So then we're setting up some sensor networks just to like, it's basically like occupancy sensors. See if like the trap is sprung.
Nice. Yeah, I guess because if it's really remote, you probably can't get to each one by vehicle either. It has to be on foot, right, to the traps.
Yeah. So they're like, they're put like pretty high up in the mountains, where like, or not the mountains, but the hills where the boar like kind of hang out. So
yeah, right. That's great. I mean, like that's the kind of thing where like that is a, both of those things are such enabling technologies, you know, for. When I think of aging populations, that's probably not what I would have guessed would have been like the enabling thing, but that's really great that it is. It's so active still.
Yeah. People out here, like, they're like, you know, like they're older, but they're like super strong and healthy, and like they're really active. It's like, wow. And then so, but I think they're like limited in what they like. I mean, I just, there are certain limitations. Like, you can't like hike up a mountain every day, just like check your traps. So.
Right. But if you can, you're really healthy.
Yeah. If you can, then like they'd be healthier than me. Like, I could barely
right.
have to walk like a couple hundred meters. I'm like, Jesus, what the hell?
Yeah, man. These things happen. Don't worry. 2016 could be the year of hiking the mountain foothills, you know?
Yeah.
That's great. And so you were saying you call these different systems something or what?
They're sensor networks. I don't know. Internet of pigs? I'm not sure exactly.
Pigs in traps!
What was that? Pigs in space.
That's pigs like, in space from Muppets. Yeah.
Familiar. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, man. I love Muppets. But anyways,
me
sorry
too.
About that.
Yeah. Gotta love the Muppets.
So what about you? So what about for 2015? What's your highlight reel? Anything?
Did the Hackaday. The SuperCon was great. That was good. A lot of work stuff. Mm-hmm.
About contextual electronics.
Yeah, man, that's been going for almost a year now. A little bit less than a year. It would start on the 20th again. So
is it that young? I thought it's been going on for a lot.
Sorry,
longer.
The second session. So like the first time it went like January 2014. It went for like 3 months, and then there was a 1 month break, and then another 3 months, and now then it started back up in January this year, and then it's been continuous since. And so between me and then two of the embedded instructors, we made probably 300 plus videos this year. Which is not like quantity. Quantity is not always a great measure. I talked to Dave about this too. It's not necessarily a great measure, but the thing I'm really proud of is just like the consistency. Just because my setup is very easy to kind of just turn it on and start talking about the project I've been working on. So just, you know, like getting through boards. I mean, like you have so many boards that you've been working on. Just getting stuff in the pipeline. It's so important to kind of keep that pipeline full. Because you don't want to just be sitting there. You need to, you know, you start on one thing, you got to start, you put the 10 out to fab, you got to start on the next thing. It's just, this is where I always I start getting kind of upset, where it's like, when people talk about like the, you know, I like a lot of the enabling, like the milling machines and these new circuit printers and stuff. They're cool, but like, it's not practical. I mean, like, it's just like, there's already, I mean, yes, it'd be nice to have an instant turnaround, but in reality, I've got a workflow where it's just, I've got so many things to be doing. And I'm sure it's the same for you, right? It's like, if you're not assembling something, you're testing something. If you're not testing something, you're working on the next board. You're sourcing parts. You're doing all these different things. It's just a lot of parallel processes.
Yeah. It's like, I think at the current price point, it really almost like, basically, it doesn't make sense to purchase like a lot of at least the PCB mills that I'm seeing, because like it's just so cheap to turn PCBs, and like there's like so much, it's so much nicer when you have like a solder mask and like plated vias.
Or four layers. Like, man, four layers is the devil that calls my name every time. Like, ooh, you could just add two more layers. That would make things so simple. Just drop a via to the power grain plane.
Four layer boards. I like. Like, if I really need to shrink a board, then four layers. It's like, I like to go four layers, but it's like kind of a luxury for me.
It's just sometimes it's like, of course, it's just easy, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. No, four layers is nice. So,
it ups the cost a little bit, but I'm okay with that sometimes. I'm not doing anything fast. So what is the turnaround time on your stuff? I mean, what kind of times are you trying to get hit?
Like for my PCBs, it depends. Like sometimes I need quick turns on since I do a lot of RF stuff, then I think if you do an RF or maybe like analog and you have to tweak things a lot, then I think that like maybe PCB mills are useful because like I'm always like playing around with different radios and like the different radios are all like quirky and so you know, sometimes you need like a they're very particular about the layout.
Yeah.
So like, you know, so if I have to wait like 2 weeks every time I spin a board, then that's a problem. But generally, yeah, I mean, it's just so cheap. I mean, like if I go like for prototyping, I use Seed and Dirty PCBs. So that's like Ian's thing. And then, and so, I mean, it's like $10, $20. I mean, even like $50 for like, you know, like a batch of 10 PCBs. And like, that's like so disgustingly cheap. It's like, it's painful.
Right. It's like, how are they doing? What are they putting in these things?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I think it's really interesting because it changed a lot of things because the entry cost of doing, like, you know, very sophisticated technical stuff has fell through the floor. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's awesome because it, like, it enables a lot of people to, like, just, you know, do a lot more things. But I don't know. I guess there's like a parallel problem, which is that it only enables people that know how to take advantage of it. And so like then the issue, which I guess you run into with contextual electronics, is then of education. Like who knows how to control all these things, like all these possibilities.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's like you almost kind of have to be a jack of all trades type or Jill of all trades. You know, like just you have to dabble in everything in order to really take advantage, right? You have to.
Yeah. Or I think you have to know like that the possibilities exist, and then like, and then I mean, yeah, you.
Oh, it's like the knowing what to Google for problem, like that one.
kind of, but yeah. I mean, you have to like it's one of those things where I feel like it's kind of like also how you're brought up, like you know, like a lot of kids are brought up to be like kind of they feel like anything is possible and they're experimental and they'll try things and that's how you really learn something. But like you know, like my upbringing is like, you know, don't do that, don't rock the boat, you know, just like get good grades and everything will be fine.
Right.
It's like it's like typical Chinese parents.
Yeah.
Like, and then I was.
And I think so, that's like, I think that's just an academic mindset as well. You know, it's like that grades the goal is to get the grades and get the paper and get out, right? And this is kind of what you and I had talked about on the show this week. Anyways, was kind of the traditional educational model and how do you break outside of that, right? I mean, that is continually the problem that we're running into.
But yeah, I mean, I think like so out here, like so like I live at a place called Hacker Farm, and then so we have like a bunch of technical people here too, but then there's like a lot of like technical people with families, and so like we and then you know, or just like families in general out here too. And then we think a lot about like kind of the education system and how like what's good and what's bad. Like my thinking is that like the education system isn't completely bad, but I think like in Japan then there's a lot of education reform that needs to be done. I'm pretty sure it's like everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and so this is my understanding of the Japanese education system is that it's very rigid and test based. Is that correct or no?
I think that's a that's a good summary.
Yeah, I just remember talking to some people and just like the stresses around and a lot of like entrance exams, stuff like that. And it's not just Japan, obviously. There's a lot of countries that are like that where the focus on entrance exams is just a huge stressor. But what does it really show? I mean, like it's like yes, it's a way to delineate one person from the next. But
yeah. I feel like so, well, basically, how it works in Japan is you're also given a class ranking based on how well you do on tests, and I think that's like a horrible thing to do because like people or children then start measuring their value in terms of their class ranking, which I feel like is very non-ideal. And a lot of people that are out here, like in Kamigawa, then it's like the cost of living is really low. And so like we, you know, along with farmers, there's also a lot of artists and hippies and stuff. And a lot of people, they just kind of like don't fall into the traditional mold in Tokyo. Then they end up just like coming out here. And like when I see them and talk to them, like a lot of them are just like brilliant or like super creative artists and just really, I mean, you know, like they should be, you know, they should be celebrated as well. But like, you know, when they were talking about how they were going through school and they like, they had a lot of problems, they had to drop out, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's like, and I think like the whole test-based system is that if you don't fall into line with like how like the school system judges you, and then you're basically cast aside and it affects your life. And that's like, I feel like that's wrong.
I agree. I mean, I think we're both, obviously, we should warn people. Me and Akiba are on the exact same page on this. Not the exact same, but, we're going to be coming at this from a very similar angle. But, yeah, I mean, like, I totally agree. And, of course.
Let's just pat each other on the back while we're at it, too.
Great point, good sir. Righto.
I'm pretty liberal in my ideas about education, but so sorry I interrupted.
So I've been thinking about how to talk about these things recently, and okay, so like a first principle here would be creativity is important, right? I agree with that. maybe some people don't agree with that, but I, you know, that's where I start from, is like creativity is important. Okay, great.
I think it's one of the most important skills to have. You know, like I think like, you know, liberal arts is like kind of a foundation skill that you need. So but anyways.
So you put creativity kind of in that liberal arts bin or what?
Yeah, well I'd say like programming and electronics and all that I would consider it more like kind of founded in liberal arts rather than, you know, rather than logic. I mean, part of it is logic, but a lot of it is like kind of creativity based. So
Like, I don't know. I guess I try not to think about it like that, where it's like, you know, one thing or another, like liberal arts or technical or anything like that. I think about it honestly. I think about it like music, right? Like like jazz specifically. I always think about jazz because I love jazz. Okay. But I think I mentioned on the show before. But like basically, you don't start by just playing random notes. You start by emulating. You start by, you know, you find someone that you want to play like, or you find a song you want to play and you start playing it, and you have this form, and then you start to recognize patterns. And then eventually you start then not only, you know, combining patterns and reassembling them, but then you also break out of the patterns in order to create something new. You know, that is like the basis of, I think that kind of creation pattern is common amongst everything, you know, even just like mathematical proofs, right? Eventually, you know, you start with prove the same proof that everybody else has, the loci and all that other crap, and then eventually, you know, you get enough, far enough along and you're at the frontier, and then you have to start playing with, you know, all these different new ideas. The testing at the beginning though is one of the problems. It's like, okay, you can test whether or not someone has followed the thing exactly, but then people don't move on from that. They don't say, oh well, you know, it's not like am I understanding and trying different things? It's no, are you just following it exactly? You know, that's because of how testing works in the first place. So if I say you need to go play Baba Black Sheep on the piano, that's great. But then if you become a PhD in Baba Black Sheep, that doesn't really do anyone any good, right? You need to actually encourage the breaking out of that eventually. And how do you measure that? And one of the problems is you can't measure the quality of breaking outside of that. That, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean a lot of it, I think, also has to do with I don't want to get too philosophical, but I think a lot of it has to do with like kind of innate, like allowing like external people to judge like a skill or value versus like internal. Like actually, so
okay, can you give an example?
When I was a dancer, so when I was dancing, yeah, it's like to start off dancing, and then like especially street dancing, you learn a lot of like kind of the basic moves. So like just like you said, you start off like it's all like technique, and you spend all your time working on technique and like getting mm-hmm. all the different like kind of muscle, like the muscle control and all that. And then you get to a certain point where when you understand the basics, then you know which areas you can push. And like also, like once you understand and you master and you like kind of get really good with the rules, then you know when it's okay to break the rules. And I think that's really important, because that's when you start kind of going to the next level.
Right.
And
now, well, one of the things with the dancing thing, though, like I think even when there's when you're learning the beginnings of that stuff, people are still encouraged to try other things, right? Like to try. I mean, to try and break out earlier or no? I mean, I feel like we're also disproving the same point that we're trying to prove. You know what I mean? Like, well, people should just follow the rules at the beginning.
Well, actually, I would say yes and no. I do think that rules are important. Like, you need a certain amount of like kind of discipline, and like kind of like you need like a framework. Like, yeah. So when people start, then like, in fact, like for dancing, then like when people started out, then I would kind of tell them, oh, you know, this is how it's done. This is how it's done. This is how it's done. And then like later on when they practice by themselves, and they can experiment like kind of with other ways too.
Yeah.
But I think the initial framework is important, but then it's also important to like encourage them to break out of it. Like, I think there's like, like in Japan, then one thing that I noticed is that like a lot of the dancers all dance kind of similar, and because they're all studio taught, and like so they're taught like there's only one way to do this. Whereas I think, like, I was always kind of like, I was big into like, you know, like I like technique, but I also like freestyling a lot. And then freestyling is where you kind of let yourself go, and when you see that, then like you can actually see everybody's like so individual when they dance. Like the way, like the movements are all like kind of really just like almost like signatures.
Yeah. And right. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, I think the other thing with dance too is that like you're not really, I guess one of the other things that we're kind of talking about here is practical application versus theoretical application, right? Because obviously we're also talking about electronics, right? One of the things that I struggle with is people, you know, like the first thing you do is like, I want to learn electronics. Okay, well, let's talk about the math. Whoa. that would be like, it's like, I want to learn how to dance. And it'd be like, all right, well, let's talk about the history of foot technique. It's like, well, no, but like even a dancer who's starting out and following, that's still the practical application of following in the footsteps of someone else. Okay, let's try this move and let's see if you can, you know, control your body to replicate it. That's a practical application of that thing versus sitting down and studying it. You know what I mean? Like that's,
I feel like actually though that like say like jazz and dance are, I mean, they're not academic. I mean, they're still basically like kind of apprentice, like almost like apprenticeships, which I think is kind of how I feel like that's like a better way to learn things than like, you know, currently in academia, where you're taught a lot of theory. Yeah. You know,
right.
Like,
right.
Like in dance, like you learn like say a dance routine or a dance piece, and then you perform it at the end of like say the lesson or the class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, and like in jazz too, right? Like you might someone says like, oh, well, they play this chord, then play this chord, and play this chord. It sounds good, and let's play around and see, you know, can you follow this pattern? And then later you go and you learn the music theory, and it's like, oh, well, here's why it sounds good, and here's the actual music theory behind it. And then you're more compelled to do it. Same thing with electronics. It's like, let's light up an LED to start with, and then let's go back and talk about the gate capacitance on a FET. You know what I mean? Why does that exist? You know,
like let's light up an LED and then light up another one.
Right. But, well, and that's the, I mean, that's another good point, is that it very quickly could become, you know, banal to keep doing the same beginner stuff over and over again, right? It's all, you need to keep building. And there is totally a place for the theory, because without the theory, eventually you just get confused because you have these mental models and you don't have anything to fall back on. Physics. It's got to be a combo, but it's kind of when it feels like when and how people insert the theory versus the practical feels a little backwards to me these days.
But yeah, I think like actually, because that's a good point. I mean, like, if I were to teach someone electronics, I'd probably start out, like, you know, first by doing, like, really, like, the basics, like LEDs and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And then, because you really don't need to understand, like, kind of, like, actually, like, transistors, or even, like transistors, you don't really need to understand about transistors until you want to start driving bigger LEDs, yeah, or, like, right, bigger
right.
things.
Right, yeah. Right?
And then, so then, like, you'll eventually hit that roadblock where, you know, hey, I want to drive this 10-watt LED. Well, it's like, well, you can't, like, drive it off a pin on the Arduino. So, like,
right. Well, you could, I suppose, if you had to charge up the gate long enough, right? you're saying not doing it directly. You need to talk about FETs then, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, then they need to, like, start kind of, then it's like, you know, then it becomes like something like contextual electronics. Not sure if you heard about that term, but it's like very,
It's hip these days, yeah. A lot of people are saying context.
But, yeah, and then, like, even, like, kind of the...
Akiba is a plant for contextual electronics.
So I'm getting the referral fee, right?
I forgot about that, yeah.
the gate capacitance on, like, the gate capacitance on the transistor. Like, you don't even need to really know about that until you start running into problems where, like, you want to start, you know, like, how fast you want to switch the capacitor, or, you know, so, like, yeah. So then, like all of that stuff is just, I mean, it's really, well, it depends on the need, so.
Yeah, and I don't know how you got started, but I know when I got started, I was like, well, I want to learn everything about this topic, and I would go open a textbook, and then I'd, you know, start learning about, like, the gate capacitance. Oh, let's talk about process technology. Let's dive down this rabbit hole. You know, and sometimes Wikipedia holes are fun, but by the time, you know, it's 3 hours later and you're sweating and you're like, I don't understand anything. You know, and it's just like, sometimes you have to just be okay, kind of that comfort in discomfort, you know what I mean? Just kind of comfortable not knowing, and not comfortable, but just okay with it for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, all that stuff is abstracted out now. And, like, I think, like, I don't know, they're, like, in kind of, you can make a very loose argument that it's okay to know that stuff, but you don't need to know about process technology to, like, to use a chip, or, you know, like, you just kind of, like, generally, like, you know, like, for, like, all, for, so, I don't know, I just feel like,
well, yeah, how about this? When do you feel like you need to understand process technology in your work? I mean, when are you like, I should really go figure out what process this chip is being run on. Is there ever time for that or no?
Let me see. Let's see. All right. If I was, first of all, if I wanted to check if there's, like, 5-volt tolerance on a chip.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah, yeah. Is this old process or is this new process, or are there diodes on the front end that are faking the 5-volt tolerance or what?
Yeah. Right? And then, like, just, like, you know, op amps, like, you know, if it's, like a JFET op amp, or, you know, like,
CMOS
op amp. Yeah. It's like, so when you get into, like, bipolar processes or something like that. But then, like, I don't really, there's not a lot of times where I'm like, oh, this is a 90 nanometer process. So, you know, I'm looking for, like, a 45 or, like, a 130. It's like that, that kind of thing doesn't really happen too much. Like, it's mostly, like, you know, I'm mostly like, oh, how much does that chip cost? God damn.
That must be new.
I can get the same thing for $1.
Yeah, right, right, right. Do I need to pay that much for that chip? I don't know.
And then, And then I feel like a lot of people in open hardware, like, we're just like, at least people today are just totally spoiled by, like, all the cheap Chinese chips that are coming out. Like the
ESP8266 type.
Yeah, it's like a $3 Wi-Fi module, and it's like, and then so now people are just like, oh, Wi-Fi, it's only $3 to get an embedded module, and it's like totally like, oh, you guys are so spoiled.
Yeah, back in my day,
when I was a kid, we had to modify our Linksys routers just to, you know.
That's right. Do right. You had a piece of blue plastic strapped to every single thing that you wanted to do.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, modify the firmware, and then, like, kind of, like, duct tape the router to, like, some pole, and then, you know.
Yep. Like... Oh, man, that's funny. So, okay, so you mentioned that there's people with families at the farm. Are you seeing them kind of bring their families into the fold? I mean, and how are they doing that?
I think, yeah, so, like, So one of the guys, I was trying to get him to come on, like, to talk today too, but he's at the cafe cleaning up. But
he's on kitchen duty. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he's like a programmer. He actually specializes in like kind of like virtual reality and augmented reality. But
oh wow.
But he has a child that's like about 2 years old, and also recently his wife's sister's daughter, so his wife's niece, was having like some issues in Tokyo, and then so she came out to live with them also, and so like, and she's 12 years old now, so mm-hmm. like he suddenly became like a father of like a full family, like yeah. with a teen, you know, complete with a teenager and an infant, and yep. so like and it and like we all like kind of hang out, like the girl's name is Ark, and we all kind of hang out with Ark, and like and like everybody loves her, and so like, but it's interesting that like, so she's kind of into the whole Japanese school system, and then it spurs a lot of discussion about, oh, like, you know, like, you know, it, like, is the school system adequate? Is it like, she's really creative, like, will it be able to, like, you know, will it be able to address the fact that she likes art a lot, you know, because like,
yeah, right.
They've gotten rid of a lot of the humanities classes in Japan, and they're like, you know, and you know, this like kind of, they're basically trying to turn Japan into like a nation of like STEM education, which is like mm-hmm. which I feel is like sad.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, that I you know, for a long time I was very much for that. You know, just saying, I mean, because obviously I want people to have kind of a technical background, but it's like, no, I really want both. I don't know, like, whatever dimension you come to, like, as long as people figure out that they should be doing electronics, listen to the Amp Hour eventually, I don't really care.
I just want more listeners 20 years from now. That's what I
right,
want.
That's only half not true. I mean, but I mean, honestly, like, however, like, I never think that people should be, you know, I always dislike when people are criticized for like, oh, well, you don't have the background. It's like, who cares? If you're interested, you know, that is so much more important. You know, I've seen people that are interested that can do a lot more than someone with a background. Myself included, I have a background, you know, I have a college background in electronics, and there are people that are, you know, way outside what I can do. I mean, like, just because there's interest and there's passion with it, and they're sticking with it. You know, that kind of stuff, you can't fake it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, it's interesting because technology, like being like a school trained technology person is, I mean, it's okay, but like, I think like at this point, technology is basically a trade skill. Like, you know, like programming, like, you know, there's yeah. trade schools that are just like cranking out JavaScript programmers, like left and
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And then I think electronics has gotten to the point where, you know, as long as you know, like, it's like similar to Python. As long as you know which libraries to use and like you have a basic understanding of like C syntax, then you can pretty much do like, you know, embedded design and programming. So
yeah, I mean, it's a lot of integration pieces for sure. And the people that can, you know, it's not like, it's not regurgitation, but it's really, you know, it's surveying the landscape. Okay, what's out there? What can I use? How do I need to, you know, go and implement those things? Mm-hmm. And then how can I quickly do that and get it all working together? Some people would say that's always been part of it, but I think that you know, it's so much more the piecing it together and understanding how the whole system works is such an mm-hmm. important piece.
Yeah, yeah, but I feel like a lot of times in like so, you know, when I was in school, like they never really taught the big picture. Like you always just learn like very small fractional pieces of stuff. Like you know, like when I was taking control systems and stuff, and then like they just, you know, this is a control loop, this is PID, and then you know, this is how
here's your Z-plane.
Oh yeah, yeah. They show you the overshoot, they show you like what the undershoot looks like, but they never tell you like why you'd want to do that. And so like, you know, like why, like if you have overshoot that you could potentially destroy your motor, or if you have undershoot that like your segue will fall over
you know, injuring the person that's writing it, or something like that. And so, like,
take a long time to start up. And,
like, it's never kind of, it was never put in those terms for me. So I never really, like, so I feel like my academic education, electronics education, was fairly limited. And I had to, like, kind of discover, like, a lot of the stuff on my own.
Right. Well, and I you know, I've talked, so I've mentioned on the show before, but I was at the, I was asked to go to the, I was invited to go to the, and I was very, very nice that they did, but they invited me to the EE Department Heads Association.
Uh-huh.
And I stood up and asked, I was like, you know, what is the role of practical education? And I, you know, I was, and basically the, all of these, and this was asking a bunch of, like, heads of companies, and they're like, yeah, we don't really care. And I'm just like, what the hell? I don't remember the exact situation now, other than I was just fuming with anger in the back of the room. You know, but basically it was these heads of company, like these CTOs that were saying, no, 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 we want test scores. We don't want practical. And it's like, you know, even companies that are doing like tons of simulation and stuff like that, if you're just good at simulating, you need to still have some kind of practical application, or you're, you don't understand what's actually going on. It's just, you're just twiddling knobs on a computer, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. That, yeah, that makes me angry too, actually.
Yeah, it was bad, man. I was ready to storm the stage. But I was invited to go there, so I shouldn't have done that. So
I mean, like, I think there's a there's like the whole thing about I think there's like kind of the old school technology industry that exists, and then like the that's more like kind of, you know, like, like they just like, oh, we'll just take them out of college and like train them up, or, you know, or just stuff like that. And like the old school technology companies that like care about, like, you know, oh, what kind of GPA they got, et cetera, et cetera. And I think like kind of,
I feel like the only problem though is that no one trains anymore, right? I mean, that's that used to be true. Sure. Yeah. Back in the day. Yeah. Great. But who trains anymore? I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's more important like to really assess like what is someone capable of, and also like how willing are they to learn, because I think there's almost nobody that like knows everything. So like, you know, it's like really kind of like how fast and how willing you are to like try new things and like learn about them.
Yeah, and that comes down to company culture as well. Are people rewarded for trying new things? Are they punished heavily if they fail, that kind of, yeah, there's a lot of elements there, of course. But yeah, it's,
Yeah, I don't.
So how do we fix it, man?
Yeah, I think so. For being out here, then we're currently working with like a mother's group, and we're tossing around the idea of putting together like something similar to Hacker Moms. So that was Hacker Moms was like kind of a hackerspace that like
I've never heard of that.
Oh, really? It's like a hackerspace in Oakland. Like, my sister started it. And actually, she got the idea because I was telling her about Tokyo Hackerspace while we were eating at, like a macaroni and cheese at an Oakland restaurant. And then she was, like, and she was a mom. And, like, she was, like, jealous because we were doing a lot of, like, interesting projects at the hackerspace. And she said, there should be a hackerspace for moms. And, like, the next day, she just, like, kind of got together a group of four moms. And then, like, they started, like, putting the plans together to do Hacker Moms.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
But I think, well, the concept behind Hacker Moms was that, like, you know, like happy creative moms lead to happy creative children. And so like the idea was that the focus should be put on the moms, you know, and like, and having the moms feel like they're like kind of creatively, you know, or just like, just, you know, fulfilled in like what they're able to do, rather than their whole focus like be on the children.
Ah, right.
So it should be important definitely, that the moms are doing like interesting stuff, and the kids can watch the moms do interesting stuff, and then they will emulate their parents. But yeah, in that case,
that's like a mini apprenticeship, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, parent child, master apprentice type of thing.
So yeah, we're talking to some other groups about trying to set something up similarly over here, and like maybe using our cafe for like a meeting once a week. And so we'd have like, so at our cafe, then we have like a dedicated room where we can turn it into like a kids' playroom, and then just have like like a sitter monitoring the kids while, you know, for a couple hours while like the moms like can do some stuff. But then also like, so that's one thing, is to start like working directly with the moms. And the other thing is also, like, I think for the older kids, and then start adding maybe after school education, after school events, because like I think rather there's like been discussions about homeschooling, and like I'm not really like, that's a little bit too much for me. Like I think the education system like can provide like at least a decent framework, and then after school, then you can kind of like de-educate them on like the bad things.
Right. Well, yeah, there's a lot of benefits just to the social aspects of a lot of that stuff. I mean, obviously there's downsides to, you know, being in middle school as well, but there's a lot of positive things from the social interactions as well.
I mean, I think so. I don't have like any, like I think the school system, like it, I feel like it's important to work within the school system rather than against it. And so like, I feel like homeschooling is a bit too like kind of like homesteading.
Yeah. Well, there's that, that alt school. Did you see that? It's like a school in Silicon Valley. That's like a startup, and it's just like, okay, yeah, it's different. I don't know. I just, there is a lot. What I will say is that, like, so first off, I have no kids, so I don't understand a lot of this stuff. So don't write in and tell me that I don't know that anything, because like, you might be right, but I'm going off my experience. And I think that there's a lot of talented teachers out there and that want to do this stuff. And they're so, at least in the States, I know that they're very handcuffed by a lot of testing requirements, all that kind of stuff. Mm. And it sucks, but it's really, it's, you know, if there are ways to allow them to be more creative and work with the kids, that would, you know, that is, I agree that working within the schools is great if possible.
I mean, well, I think so. Yeah. I feel like education reform is needed everywhere, but yeah, it's like, at least I won't be able, or at least I don't think we'll be able to really just kind of be completely outside the system. So I think,
right. Yeah.
I think, you know,
well, even if you started an enrichment program or like an after school type of thing, or like, mm-hmm. you know, I got contextual electronics, mm-hmm. like the baseline assumption is going to be, yeah, everyone's got that background of some kind of, you know, formal, you know, mm-mm. elementary, middle, high school education type of thing. And you're going to be going against that. Right. So one of the things that I struggle with is like people asking me, well, how do I know what my grade is, or how do I know that I've passed?
Oh yeah. That's what a horrible,
right. And that's just how people are trained. It's fine. And I'm like, well, you know, you've passed when your device works, when you show someone, you hand it, you're the thing that you've been working on, and it works. And I don't care how you got there.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you how, but I don't care how you got there. But that doesn't scale at all. That's the real problem. And all this stuff, it's all about scale.
I mean, like, I believe that, like in Japan, the school system was created in order to train people to work at factories, right? Because Japan was a huge export nation. Yep. And then after World War II, they designed the whole education system just so that people can, like, be proper cogs in, like, the large machine. And then,
And Japan had some big machines, too, like Kawasaki and, like, all those huge corporations were just, like,
I mean, like,
Nakatomi, right?
But it's Nakatomi. That sounds familiar, but
it's from Die Hard, sorry. Oh, right. That was terrible.
Oh, okay.
Fictional corporation.
Bad pop culture reference.
Yeah, really bad.
But, I mean, so I think that's why I feel like, you know, I feel like it's unsuited for, like, the current environment, and like most education systems aren't, because like the problem is like the environment changed so rapidly, right? Because like,
yeah,
you know, like information, I think, because information is freely available, like basically anybody with enough discipline can go out and learn anything they want.
Yeah, but then again, it's also helpful to have other people supporting and, you know, following along with you, and
yeah
people to bounce ideas off of. Yeah, it's and doing that in person too, that's another thing that I've always struggled with. I say from my basement while I talk to someone in Japan.
I hear you. I barely leave my lab, actually. But So I don't know. I think it's like a long protracted problem. But I'm I have a lot of hope. There's like a lot of people that see the value in like STEAM rather than STEM, which is like kind of the art, like adding the arts into the whole STEM thing.
Yeah, and I said, I was against that at first, and now I'm totally, totally see the light on that stuff. I mean,
on the arts.
Yeah, I mean, just adding that creative aspect in there. You know, it's just it is important. I think a lot of people rebel against it. Like they're like, oh, well, it doesn't belong in that group, and it's like, well, okay, sure, but you know, someone just doing math problems also doesn't. You know, there's no application there. A could be application, and art is the application of a lot of different things, right? I mean, I don't know. It's just there's.
I feel like
people need to chill out.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like somebody just doing a lot of math problems by themselves all the time is also kind of like, I would call it like, they sound like an artist to me also. So like,
a number artist.
Yeah. I mean, it's like working. Cause then I would call a writer an artist, and like a writer works with words and like, you know, and written text. So.
Yeah. But if someone's just doing, I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Anytime you try and define something like that, you know, where it's like, oh, well, no, this is the group and everybody else is outside of it type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what, you know?
Well,
I think so much of this stuff is just the human nature aspect too, where there's, you know, organizations, there's power struggles within it, that kind of thing, right? Like a lot of this education piece, there's an entrenched group that wants to keep things the way they are, and there's other people that want to try and change it, and everybody's kind of, you know, battling back and forth, and it's just, yeah, it's going to take time because you have to try a lot of different things. So,
okay, so I have two other topics that I wrote on my Evernote notes, like as
yes,
I'm trying to be.
Yes, we did have other ones. Yeah, they're sort of related, I think.
Well, so yeah, so one of them is hardware startups, and the other one is depression, especially in the technology, in the tech industry. So,
right.
I think hardware startups is more happy to talk about. So, like. Maybe we should talk about that.
Right. We'll end on the sad thing, right? So what about hardware startups? Because I mean, we've talked about that here. Some people complain about it. I don't really care. I think it's there's a lot of stuff going on in the space these days. There will be more stuff coming. What's your take on it?
I think it's great. I think there's like because there's like kind of renewed interest in hardware, which is like amazing. And I think a lot of that is being driven by, you know, like people are discovering like the whole machine that's like out in like China and Shenzhen, and then like just kind of, you know, and like that it's actually possible to make custom stuff, custom hardware, custom enclosures, etc. And I also think SparkFun and Adafruit had a big role in it, and also I guess Seed Studio had a big role in like kind of shaping a lot of like kind of redefinition of hardware as something cool. I would probably say Adafruit. Like I have a lot of respect for Lamour and like everything that she's done for electronics.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So like but yeah, so the hardware startups is really interesting. Like I like what is it? So
well, you see this too because you consult with Media Lab, so you see people coming out of that space. But then you also talk, you know, you've done tours. I think last time you're on, you were talked about how you and Bunny were given tours.
Yeah. Well, we run a whole kind of manufacturing workshop for Media Lab out in Shenzhen, and like this past year, then we did it. We were working out of Hackcelerator, which like kind of donated space for the for the workshop, and so we spent 6 weeks. 6 weeks in Shenzhen with the students, and then took them through like so they actually had to do like 3D solid design like in SolidWorks, and then we got the tooling made for the injection molding, and then we showed them all the different types of injection molding that they could do, so like in mold lamination where you can have actually designs like molded into the plastic. Yeah, or like or just like different finishes. Like they had to choose their own finish and they specify like the ABS polycarbonate or you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so like
right, material types, yeah.
And then so it's pretty so the manufacturing workshop is pretty interesting. But then so a lot of that the really interesting thing is that because as students, like they're just kind of they haven't really and especially at the Media Lab, they're like in utopia, and they're like they haven't really been into the real world, and a lot of them like they just didn't know that all this stuff existed and like that it's possible to do it all, and so like we took them to a bunch of different factories. Like One was a mannequin factory and like to see how mannequins were made. And actually,
it's creepy as hell.
Yeah, super creepy. Actually, I'll send you some pictures so you can post, because I think everyone will get a kick out of the pictures. But yeah, it was like one of the girls worked with social robotics, and she was really interested in the mannequins as like a way to like, you know, like humanize, like I guess not humanize robots, but just like, you know, like in
get them out of the uncanny valley kind of thing, or what?
In application of that stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of debate about uncanny valley, because it's not a proven thing, and so it was like one guy's conjecture on like. But anyways, that's like a different story.
Yeah. That obviously is an elite group that you were helping out. Media Lab is definitely some talented folks.
Yeah, I mean it's because it originally started because Bunny and I had been like we were actually drunk at a bar in Tokyo like 3 years ago, and then he said, "Oh, it'd be really cool if we could just like kind of show people like or show students what's going on in Shenzhen so that they like you know, so they could benefit." And then like that turned into the first group of Media Lab tours, and then we thought that would be it, so we just did it once and then it was over. But then it turned out to be a big hit, and so like 2 years later then they're requesting, or they're trying to do it like every year, like regularly every year. It was interesting actually. I think someone from Stanford had contacted me and they wanted to do something similar too, but it was just like it's like too much
getting rivalry.
The problem is if you do like, if you're like, you know, if you keep on going to factories, then like the factory people will hate you.
So you're going to order now?
Yeah. It's like, where's our order? Oh, we just came to bring students. That's all. It's like
Right. Yeah.
So
it could be a nice side business. Start charging per head, you know, like a amusement park.
Yeah. But actually,
so what about people outside of that? I mean, like, so like obviously we have a lot of listeners. I mean, like how do they learn that stuff?
So this was really interesting. So my girlfriend had actually she started a publishing company, and she's publishing like her children's book first. So she found a print manufacturer in China, through Alibaba, and then she talked to them. They gave her a quote. The quote was like reasonable. I think it was like, so like I'm gonna give numbers too. It's like I think it was like around $2.40 per unit in a quantity of 1,000 for a full offset printed.
And what's a
four color hardback? So sorry, what?
What's a unit, like a 100-page book or something, or
it's
what is
like
it?
Like I think it was about a 50-page hardback book, like full four color, like four color children's book on coated paper. So I've actually learned like a lot of my terminology now. So my book terminology. So she got quoted through Alibaba. She like had it done, and when the book came back, it was just horrible. Like the quality was just like crap. Well, no, actually, so they sent her digital proofs. So these are proofs of the book done on a digital printer, but with like the, you know, but it's supposed to be a very close match to like the final product, which would be done on an offset printer.
Yeah.
And the proofs were beautiful, and the offset printing was horrible. And so it was just like this, like, so she got 500 units of crap, like unsellable crap. And so and she's like, I don't know what happened. So for people that, and this is like very common for people that like try and manufacture stuff in China, is that they just think, oh, I can just go on Alibaba and like, you know, and get something manufactured. Whereas
she did this without going, is that correct? Or
Yeah. So this was all like online. Gotcha. And one of the things that we like kind of like teach the students is that you have to be very hands-on when you manufacture. And so like, so the first thing I did is like I went to, like, she lives in Hong Kong, so I went to Hong Kong, and then I took her across the border to Shenzhen, and then we went and visited the factory where the books got printed. And then, you know, like I pretty much just bitched out the guy, like, and then like, you know,
right.
And he was like kind of like a low sales guy, like a low rung on the ladder. And I was like, you know, where's your boss? You know, like I want to talk to your boss, right? And that's like, that's when they get freaked out, because they think, because their pay will get docked or something like that.
Yeah.
You know. So then, yeah. And then, so he like we and then we look we did a tour of the factory. They had like just amazing equipment. They like they print for people like DK Publishing and like and National Geographic and stuff like that. So they had all their equipment. And then I was like, so, you know, what the fuck happened then? Why you guys have like amazing equipment? How did this happen? And it turns out that what they do is for small orders, they outsource it. They outsource it to a small print, like they outsource it to a small print shop, and then they keep the margin. But the thing is, they didn't do quality checks on the small print shop. So the small print shop was just like, you know,
crap.
Did like a rock bottom thing, and they just like, you know, sent it out. Yeah. So like, I think for anybody that wants to like manufacture in China, then like it's not like just, you know, for Media Lab or whatever. It's pretty much, it's not that hard. So you can like come up with a list of factories that you want to use, or you want to like, or you're interested in, you know, on Alibaba, and then get quotes from them and like kind of like whittle down like what you're interested in. And then I think it's really important that like once you talk and you show interest, then they'll be happy to give you a tour. And so I think if you're serious about doing some stuff and you can like, and you have the, you know, and you can make it out to Hong Kong or China.
You're saying that's a pretty big part of it though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you should go there and meet the people involved, see the factory and like talk to them. Hmm. And pretty much I think that it's important to have like kind of boots on the ground. Like, so like, you know, while your stuff is being manufactured, like maybe, you know, schedule it so that you're there while your thing is being manufactured. And then like, you know, and then you inspect it and you receive it on the spot.
Yeah.
Like, so then, and also you never pay the full amount up front. So you always pay like the final amount after you accept the final copies.
Right.
Because like, you never know what kind of quality you're going to get.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean like, yeah. So I think in terms of that, like the factory tours or whatever, all that, it's like, it's actually really easy to set up. And so you can just talk to a factory and ask, hey, I want to tour your factory.
Hmm.
It's no problem.
Do you consider yourself a hardware startup or no? I mean, Freak Labs is or isn't?
No, I don't know. Like, I'm like at kind of a weird juncture where like, I think Freak Labs is kind of like just a lifestyle company is, but I feel like I want to get more serious about it, especially the sensor networks, because now I'm in a location where I can actually use all the stuff. So then, and then also like, you know, and I'd rather like I've given up consulting and I just want to like try to make my money product sales.
Right. Well, like, so what do you see as the challenges for people that are doing hardware startups in the short term? I mean, I don't know how much the audience is actually listening or thinking about it, but, I'm guessing, you know, there might be one or two people that are.
I think for a hardware startup, let's see, I feel like, I feel like it's extremely important to at least work with someone else just as like a, you know, as a foil to like whatever you think. But also like, I guess for a hardware startup, like there's a bunch of potholes. So the first one is just like getting the prototype working, and then after that, like probably, like I think the current route is to crowdfund to get the initial funding.
Yeah, capital and everything.
So that like, yeah, for that part, I mean, like there's a whole like there's a lot of marketing that's involved there. Like you'll have to like just constantly be, you know, putting out like posts, articles, and then like kind of, you know, like hyping up whatever you're doing while you're crowdfunding.
Yeah, that part really sucks. And especially from an engineering background, I have a lot of trouble with it. Because it's like, I know the weak points of this thing. How can I just laud all of the all the fluffy stuff, what it could be doing someday? And yeah, it's tough.
I think that's actually that's actually one of the things that like, I think so during the last time like me and Bunny were in Shenzhen together, like we were on a bus trip out to one of the factories, and then we were talking with the other students, and the other students were like, you know, oh, like I don't want to do it for money, I do it like the pure love of whatever. And then it was like this whole conversation on like money shame and how like, you know, a lot of designers like are ashamed about the fact that they need money. Whereas I think, you know, it's a very important part of like, you know, like running a business. Like you need like you need money to survive. And like
margin, it's a thing, so, folks.
Like a lot of people like underprice themselves too much, or they or they don't value their own work, or you know, just all that stuff. Whereas I think it's something that you have to learn by getting bloody out in the real world.
Like running out of money, basically.
Something like that. Yeah. So like I think almost everybody I know has like has war wounds from like, you know, like doing business. Well, actually, if you're in the industry long enough, you'll have like kind of battle wounds of all sorts.
Right.
But you know, but if you run your own company, then you'll realize that like money or cash is like kind of
It sucks, but I mean like I know people that are I guess consultants usually are pretty cognizant of that kind of thing, because you have to charge a lot more than you might think it should be. But from a product standpoint too, because of the, you know, it's easy to compare yourself to like a consumer level brand and be like, oh well, that's that thing, that widget's $60 and mine's kind of similar. It's like, yeah, but you know you have to look at the whole thing. You know, are you adding support, are you adding, you know, are you adding other things to it that you could possibly charge more than you probably should, you know?
Well, I mean, like I think following the low price point is like one way to go, but then I feel like generally that's a dangerous route. Like China is like mainly plays that route, but then that's because they have like a lot of companies in China really have nothing else. They have no brand. They have like no support.
Mm-hmm.
Have no like, you know, very
no
little
IP,
English
maybe,
capability.
You know, right? There might not be.
Yeah, and so like, whereas I think, you know, like if you design something, then like kind of educating people on how to use your product. Let's see, like documentation, support,
mm-hmm.
forums. Like actually I'm getting much more active on my forums. Like I was really bad for a while. So like all that stuff is really important too. And I think if you have a product that provides value to people, then they'll be willing to pay for that value.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, it's tough in a, especially when you're doing a lot of comparisons, right? I mean, when you're comparing yourself to other companies, other people, it's like, oh, I should just do what they're doing. And nah, not necessarily. You gotta definitely.
That's a bit tough. Like I'm at the point where like, I guess I've been around technology enough that like, I kind of know like where I want to go and stuff, but I think a lot of people are still trying to figure out what they want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess for the other thing, like, so, but I would say for hardware startups, the big challenge is always manufacturing. So like, because a lot of people are really good at building like, you know, one or two or 10 of something. But then if you need to build like 100 to 1,000 to a couple thousand, then it's just completely different.
I have experience with that, and I have some late nights, you know. That's what it usually comes down to is the late nights.
So you did the, because I think for the Hackaday Supercon, then you also did a board for them, right? For the Supercon?
Oh, yeah, I did the badge. That was just a PCB, though. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a blank PCB? It wasn't mm-hmm. an assembled one? Oh,
right.
Okay.
Right. I was thinking about trying to squeeze an assembled thing in there, and then at the last minute it was like, well, we could make this a, why not let other people put stuff on there? And then it turned into badge hacking, and that worked out okay. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Supercon was amazing, especially the amount of time that you guys worked, well, the time constraints you guys worked to put it together.
So. Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it was... It wasn't just me. It was Sophie, and we had a lot of other people.
Oh yeah.
Helping out, so it was crazy.
So Sophie is she takes charge, man.
Yeah.
like she, I mean, just put a whip in her hand. She's like, whoops.
Akiba said it, Sophie. If you're listening, it was Akiba that said that.
I love you, Sophie. I just, you know, I love you. I'm just saying.
He's just saying he's afraid of you. I'm saying that too, I guess. Yeah.
You can whip me with that riding crop any day, but you know, just like.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that was amazing. That was an amazing event.
So you had one other topic you wanted to talk about.
On
your Evernote, because you're getting organized. 2016 is the year of organization.
Oh yeah. So I think, cause we were talking about this offline a bit, but yeah, Yeah, depression in technology. And I think that's kind of an important thing too, because nobody really talks about that. Like,
there's people here, there, like people might, like I mentioned to you before the show, like I think Mitch Altman and Jimmy Rogers, I think they had a group that was kind of talking about that stuff. I think that especially around like when Aaron Schwartz committed suicide, I think that was definitely one of the prompts for that kind of thing, just because obviously he was pretty depressed when that happened.
Yeah. I feel like it's kind of pervasive in, I mean, not just the tech industry, but like just like from speaking from within the tech industry, I think like depression is fairly pervasive. And like, you know, there's, you know, in my opinion, I think there's a couple of factors. Like I suffered from depression for like, you know, I think I'm just coming out of it recently. So like I kind of stopped doing a lot of like all my, like my blog and all that stuff. But and now I'm just getting back into it. But I think like one thing is that like for technology people, you pretty much just spend a lot of time in your head. So like, right, you know, right, you're like, you're thinking about, you know, like all these different factors, but they all exist in your head. So you're spending a lot of time just like kind of not doing physical stuff, but you're spending a lot of time just working things out mentally. But then also there's like this treadmill of technology that keeps on moving forward and forward. And like, if you want to stay current, then you just constantly have to like constantly have to study and stay on top of things. Like the
right, it's like a feeling of inadequacy almost, right? Like where it's like, I don't know the newest things. I'm not caught up. That kind of feeling, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then like, and then you hear about all these other people that are doing all these other like kind of interesting things using like, you know, the shiny new language. Like, I don't know, it's like the latest flavor of JavaScript framework or something like that. And then like kind of, I don't know. So like, it's just like, it's like a constant treadmill. And right. So like,
yeah. And I mean, I think social media definitely exposes that too, where you're like, oh wow, they're doing more things.
yeah. So it's
Ben Krasnow.
Yeah, Ben. I think
that guy.
He's done some crazy stuff. Like his stuff is really fun to watch.
It's so much fun. Like, I love it.
Yeah, me when I was anyways, that could be a whole different show topic, but but yeah, this is all the science stuff is like awesome. But yeah, I mean, it's just like I just feel like nobody really talks about it, but I think there's always this feeling of like, you know, oh, I'm not good enough. And like even
right. You mentioned that you and Bunny were talking about that too, and I said, what, you, Akiva and Bunny are talking about not feeling adequate, and I'm sure there's people listening right now being like, yeah, right.
yeah, I mean, well, because it's just like it's a constant thing, like the march of, you know, the march of everything, software, hardware, etc. And so like it's just this constant treadmill, and like, you know, all of us are just like running on it, like, you know, like right now in, like, I think in hardware, like things are moving towards like kind of really cheap quad core processors running Android and stuff. So like that's kind of, and then so like if you're not designing hardware with a quad core processor, like, and then porting Android over to it, then maybe you're not adequate or something like that. Which is
right,
like,
right.
It's like a huge,
and I'm still trying to learn op amps, man.
You know,
I just
then,
learned
like,
the LED thing.
But at the same time, I feel like a lot of that is like, you know, especially coming, like going through a lot of it, and like kind of, you know, just going through depression, through a lot of personal stuff, like a lot of that is just like really just in your head. And so and it's just like, just comes like, I feel like for me personally, it just came from like kind of my like confidence issues that I had as like kind of growing up that I never fully addressed, and so they just kind of manifested themselves.
Right? Yeah,
but I'm pretty sure, like it's just kind of a pervasive thing that everybody has. Like everybody, like goes through times when I think they have lapses in confidence, and I think it's normal.
Yeah, I agree. And well, so when a couple shows ago, when Dan and Michael were on the show, and we were talking about kind of like the more of the beginner side of things, especially, and just like the importance of mindset and like, you know, yeah, you just kind of, it feels like it when you're starting out, especially, you're just like looking at everything and you're looking at what people are doing online. It's just like, I will never do that. And that's not true though, because everybody started somewhere, you know, you gotta stick with it. And honestly, I think it's just about finding and enjoying the small victories. That is such a big piece of it. You know, getting those dopamine squirts to be like, all right, I'm going to try the next thing, you know, and I'll try the next thing. And then, trying to just kind of keep your head down and enjoying the, like, I remember a friend, was doing a 6502 project.
Uh-huh.
And it was a while ago. And I was just like, well, why are you doing that? And he's like, you know, I just enjoy it. I just like being able to simple instruction set, stuff like that. And I kind of just, I was like scoffed and I was like, ah, whatever. But then, you know, like that gives you confidence on the low level programming side of things. And you know, that it has all these unintended effects just because he was just having fun with it, you know? And then he became a better assembly programmer, better C programmer, all these things that were just because he was having fun.
Like, I've known a lot of people that weren't like super technical or technically proficient, you know, and that, you know, that were probably like, in terms of like, say, electronics or programming, were at a beginner level, but they just came up with amazing projects. And then I think it's really kind of, so the first thing is, I think it's important to be part of a community where, like, you don't have to, you know, or you have somebody to ask if you don't know how to do something. So right. Like, that'd be like your hackerspace or whatever, like kind of Fab Lab, Makerspace. And then
maybe even online, right? I mean, like, honestly, like that, can, if you, I mean, if you're remote, sometimes that's all you have.
Yeah. Like active on forums.
Yep.
And then I think that's important. And the other thing is, like I've seen a lot of projects which are like just purely technical, and like, you know, I think the level of like the technically it's like an amazing project, and it's like, wow, you know, you could write like scientific papers off of that project, but then they're just not very interesting. Whereas I think the most interesting things are like something that kind of strikes a chord with people. Like one of the most popular products that I designed was just like kind of a solar lantern that people can just solder together themselves. And then it just like, and then as soon as they're done soldering it, they like stick the rechargeable battery in, and then it works. And then they're just like, oh my God, it works. And like, that's like one of my most popular designs ever.
Right. Right. Like, it's like, really? Have you seen these radios? Come on, folks. Jeez.
So I think that, like, yeah, there's like this misnomer that, like, you know, technical complication equals like equals good, which I think is like is untrue. And then that's another thing that like me and Bunny discussed, which is that we're like kind of tired of technically complex things, and we're more interested in things that like kind of like that might not be complex, but like cross different domains and like twist on something that you would have never thought before.
Right. Well, and there's so many problems to solve for. Like, so what would be an example of that for you?
Well, right now I'm helping my girlfriend with her publishing company, and we're doing like a line of experimental books, which were going to be like interactive, and we'll be introducing electronics into the pages. So one of them will be we're working with Gichi. Is she's the one that did?
Oh yeah, it's Chibitronics, right?
Yeah. And then
she worked with Bunny on those stickers that basically light up and everything, right?
Yeah.
Conductive tape.
Well, she wrote a children's book, and the children's book has like LEDs and has LEDs and some control in it. And then I think, and my girlfriend also writes children's books. But then we're also like, so right now I'm experimenting with having not only like LED output, but like kind of like pressure sensitive inputs. So using piezo, like flat piezo discs.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that if you blow on a candle, then it'll go out or light up or something like that.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Then, yeah. And so the next phase, then I think we're planning on putting, so there's three things I'm really interested in. One is like a digital voice recorder. So that you can embed into the back of the book. And so, like, mm-hmm. for a children's book, then, so my girlfriend does choose your own adventure books, and so like,
I love those.
Oh yeah,
those
yeah,
are
yeah.
so much fun.
It's a choose your own adventure children's book, but then I think the interesting thing would be if there was like a voice recorder, then like the parents would be able to record their own voices on like, you know, for certain things. Like if the child chooses something and they open a page and it's like, no, that's not, you know, and then like
take the trash out.
Yeah. With their it's their parents' voice. And I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that would be cool.
The other one is like embedding NFC coils into the pages and then having like a set of cards where like each card can represent like different like morals or different characters that they use.
That's like how you choose the adventure, basically. Is that the idea?
Something like that. Then you start blurring the line between gaming, like kind of gaming and books. But which I think I'm totally fine with. But then it's like a, you know, because then you start having it interactive. As long as I'm trying to avoid introducing another screen into a child's life. That's like my thing.
Yeah, that's good.
And then the other thing that I'm curious about is adding memory to the books. So then based on your previous choices, then the book will start to take on like will start to be representative of like that child's like morality or like string of choices. So what, you know,
am I hearing that the artificial intelligence revolution is going to show up as books? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I'm curious like to see like how that would work out, where if you had like a book and then like based on your previous actions, then maybe the current choices or the current like kind of things that are available will be affected. So, you know, so I feel like that gets really interesting, but then that gets into like where, you know, cause it's not like we had a discussion about publishing, me and my girlfriend, and then like how the publishing industry seems like it's dying. But then I think it's really, or our conclusion was that it's actually kind of just, it needs to come in a different form. And so,
yeah.
So we're just like kind of playing around with that and seeing like if there's anything interesting that can come out of it.
Right. Well, and it'll be a test also as if it does come in a different form, are people willing to pay the difference when they're used to paying $5 for a children's book? Will they be willing to pay $50 or whatever that ends up costing?
Children's books don't cost $5. They cost like $15 to $20. And, you know,
no way. Wait, how old are we saying here?
I think for like the
picture I have a 2-year-old nephew. I bought like a $5 book. Come on.
Oh, really? Like, which is like Miss Sunshine book or like kind of a.
Yeah, like a little thin. I mean, it wasn't much to it. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like kind of. They have like the really. There's like a whole children's book scene. And like they're. They do like just really beautiful. Really beautifully illustrated hardback books. And like, no.
Oh.
We're even considering going to like. There's a children's book fair in like Milan. There's like a huge thing.
Business
like,
trip.
Yeah.
We had to go to Milan. It was tough. It was tough.
I don't think I'm gonna. But
it'd be a hike for you guys. Yeah.
But anyways, I think. But that'd be like an example of like say, like taking something and adding like a twist, a variation on it. Through some simple technology.
Right. Capacitive button is not necessarily, you know, you're not reinventing the wheel there, but you're using it in a novel way. That would be the interesting thing. And does it actually strike a chord?
Yeah,
with people?
Yeah. Like, would it enhance, like, would it enhance the quality of the experience or, you know, would it not? It's like, it's really difficult to say. But I think it's important to try it out and test it, and like, you know, even if it doesn't work out, we might learn something different along the way that like we can explore.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that natural application of technology. Pretty cool. That's a good idea.
I mean, like, yeah. So then, if you look at Bunny's stuff, then like, you know, he went through the same thing with Chibitronics and like doing circuit stickers. So on one hand, he's building his own laptop from scratch. On the other hand, he's building like circuit stickers that you can like put down and light an LED. And I think that's like kind of, it's really interesting that like he chose like that path also.
All these, so we one of the other things that you and I were talking about before the show was just kind of the imposter syndrome. You hadn't heard that term, but basically it's the idea of that you don't feel. Like I feel this a lot where I'm talking to guests like you, and I'm like, I don't know as much as this person, you know. It's just like I shouldn't be here. That kind of feeling of it's kind of, I feel like it's another, you know, it's kind of related to the depression thing around, you know, with the technical, it's like, I'm not good enough, or I don't know enough, that kind of thing. There's a lot of ego in the technical side of things, and it's tough to get out of that mindset.
Somehow, like somewhere along the way, the technology industry became like kind of, you know, like all the jocks moved into technology or something. And so it's like, everyone's like, oh yeah, I can do this, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I can write this web server in 3 lines of code or something like that. And then it's became like very like testosterone driven, like the tech industry. And then I feel like that's also what like turns off like a lot of what turns off a lot of people, especially like females, like to the industry, mm-hmm. is like, you know, that it's just, there's so much like kind of like competition and comparison that goes on.
Yeah, that the ego stuff bugs the crap out of me, honestly. It's like, you know, sometimes you don't know stuff and it's okay. That's okay. In fact, it's probably because you know something else that you could share. Yeah. I don't know. I don't like the ego stuff.
I think a lot of it comes via like kind of the hero syndrome, like, you know, like I'm the hero that's come to save the day, right?
And I will solve this problem with my brawn and intellect.
Right. But I think like it's just like a lot of like lone wolf people, like people working by themselves, and like they just think that they can mm-hmm. do everything themselves. And I think that's where a lot of it comes from. And those people are probably the most celebrated in technology. Whereas when you actually need to get things done, though, it's all like collaborative and comes like from like working in groups and working on projects together. And I think that's probably the most important skill to have in like in the tech industry, like in general, I think, but like in the tech industry, I think the most important thing to have is like being able to work in a group scenario and being able to collaborate and even being open to collaboration.
Right. And that involves communication and not being an a-hole.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of subtleties. One of them is like, yeah, not being an asshole. It's like,
yeah, right.
But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, I feel like intellect is probably the like one of the last things. Like, you know, most people can work their way around like Python or like Java or C or C++, something like that, or electronics. And then when you work in a group scenario, like you don't even have to be like super smart. You know, there's other people that can like back you up. And I think, but it's just, the problem is, I think in the tech media, they don't really focus too much on teams. They focus on the individual. Like, oh, you know, Elon Musk is the Iron Man of blah, 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 right? And he...
Right. And he... Yeah, when's the last time he put an op amp together, right?
Yeah. And then like, or Mark Zuckerberg and stuff. Like, they just focus on the individual. I think it's just because it's easier. And so all these people are just trying to emulate these guys who are like actually assholes. Like, Steve Jobs was an asshole. And like, you know, but in reality, like great things happen from collaboration. Like Apple didn't happen because of Steve Jobs. It was because of Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
And then the subsequent team of everyone else behind them, right?
Yeah. So then but it's just like the technical media. And I think that like that drives a lot of like this whole I guess
comparison culture and
comparison and also the imposter syndrome. Because everybody's like measuring themselves up to like Mark Zuckerberg or something.
So how do we make sure that we don't fall into that?
Like I don't know, but like how I do it is I work, like I have, you know, because I live out here on a farm. I have the community here of just like
move to the middle of nowhere with fiber connection.
No, I mean that's not what I mean. I mean I think it's just like, it's important to be like in a positive community and then and collaborate on projects or work with people that are open to collaboration. Like you don't
So like practice collaboration basically? Like you need to like
Or just like
collaboration as a skill.
I mean, I don't know if you need to practice it, but I think like, you know, if like actually being a positive community that like that's constantly doing projects, like interesting projects. That'd be like your hackerspace or makerspace.
Yeah.
And then like in a makerspace, I think like one guy, like one asshole that's like, you know, I'm the smartest guy in this place, you know, I'm like a genius motherfucker, then is normally not tolerated. Sorry, I said the MF word, but
so what happens when you move to the country, folks? You get vulgar.
Yeah. I'm a hick. Yeehaw. But yeah, I think it's important. Like, nothing really comes like just working. Nothing super interesting comes working alone. Mostly really interesting things come by working in groups. And I think like one of the best ways to avoid like the whole like comparison or whatever is like rather than compare it, you know, is just to like work in a group. Like, you know, it's you know, like if you're in a positive group, then you don't need to compare yourself to like the other person in the group. Then you guys are just trying to work to achieve a common goal of getting your project to work. I think that's the most important.
The LED blinking on at the end is a joy shared by all.
That's important. That's important. That's an important first step, the LED.
Yeah, man.
So anyways, yeah, I don't know. I don't have hard answers, especially to the whole question of like, I guess the imposter syndrome, which I just learned about, comparison, and also like all depression and in technology. But I think one of the ways around it is just to be in a positive community. I think that just does huge wonders.
Yeah, man. It's well, I mean, you said you spend a lot of time in the lab, but you do have that hacker farm that you guys are getting big too. There's a lot of people out there now.
I think it's about 12 people, and then it's kind of interesting because like even though like I say I don't leave my lab, but actually people keep like always constantly drop by, and then so it's like
the drop in, huh? Like in Seinfeld.
Yeah. Like, no, like, hello, are you busy? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, come on in, like, let's hang out. So like, so but yeah, it's pretty nice. I don't know, I feel like, well, anyways, I'm not one to give advice on all that kind of stuff, but I can share my own experience. That's pretty much the best I can do.
No, and I think that, I mean, it's an enviable situation to have like-minded people kind of living and working together. That's the dream. I think it's the dream. I have some people in town here and I see them about once a month. But man, that keeps me going, you know, just being able to sit down and talk about our stuff and support each other and, you know, talk about what we're working on.
I think you need to move to the countryside in Japan and and by the way, I think we just had a house open up around here. Just saying.
Okay. All right. Well,
just throwing it out there.
Maybe 2016. So you are going to release some products in 2016. I may move to the Japanese countryside.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Any other thoughts for 2015 as we close out the year?
2015. Let's see. I don't know. I just know, there's just I think I've tried to stop reading and like listening to news because there's so much crap on it. This is horrible. Like all the ISIS and the refugees and all that. And it's like really, so I don't know, but I have hope for the future, and I think the future is going to be wonderful. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it. So 2016 will be a wonderful year for everybody.
Nice. I like that. Head down. But what is the there's a roots lyric. Do you listen to Roots at all?
I listen to their old stuff, but then they're always like pretty cutting edge. And I like the fact they always use like live instruments.
Oh yeah, it's from Sacrifice. Nose to the grindstone, head to the stars. I always like that.
That's awesome. I'm gonna make a t-shirt with that.
Yeah. With a logo. Yeah,
no, it was the grindstone. Yeah. Head to the stars.
All right, man. I have an announcement for next week. Uh-huh. Next week, it's going to be me and Alicia and Chris will be doing a call-in show.
Alicia from like Embedded FM.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so Alicia and Chris White will be. So it'll be January 6th. We'll start at 5 p.m. PST. That's 8 p.m. EST, and we'll put a link in the show to find your local time.
Nice. So like anybody can call in? Like I can call in?
Yeah. Well, actually, we're going to be doing it like last time where there will be a post. I'll link to a post we're going to create. But basically, it's going to email us and we'll Skype with people. It'll be a little bit more
Can I do like the Jerky Boys call in? And then like me and some friends, and we take on different persona?
I like it. Yeah, go for it, man. It might be tough if you're emailing me beforehand and I'm, you know, calling your Skype name. I might figure that one out, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. That wouldn't work.
Be a little tougher.
Yeah. I could try and pretend like I'm an 80-year-old woman trying to learn JavaScript.
Well, you know what? We would encourage that.
Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like the next show sounds really awesome. Especially I like the fact that you're like doing it in collaboration with like Embedded FM.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking to everybody. So thanks for being on the show this week and Happy New Year.
Yeah. Happy New Year to you too. And thanks for having me. So
no problem, man.
Have a great 2016 to you and to everybody out there. And I hope that it's nice.
All right. We'll talk to everyone soon.
Okay. All right. See you.
So you were saying, I have the quote. Uh-huh. Actually, this is a terrible quote. They show you kind of like,